This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' WCW. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with the Jesse Ventura to my Jesse Ventura cosplay, Tim Capel. How you doing, Tim?
Well, you know, Jennifer Smith, I'm doing great here on election nights. I'm looking at the returns come in, and I think I'm going to do really well this election cycle. I do say so myself.
That's pretty good, Jesse. I like it.
It's an adequate Jesse, I feel like.
How you holding up?
I needed to use some more L words. He does a weird thing where he over-enunciates his L's. Have you noticed? Believe me, Tony Schiavone. I say my L's very strong. Yeah, I'm doing as well as anyone could be, I guess.
Sounds like angina to me.
Another pretty good Jesse.
So do we have a Dracula to our Jesse Ventura and Jesse Ventura cosplay?
Yes.
Let's bring him in.
Hello, kids. Welcome to my home.
You're doing the Tony Schiavone cosplay. I like it.
Oh, sexy.
You got to do the Tony Schiavone cosplay. That's to me, that would win Halloween. Anyone that dresses as Tony wins Halloween.
Agreed. It does.
Yeah. Yeah. Without doubt.
How you holding up, Greg?
I'm doing good. I'm here alive and well here in November. Thankfully, November of one of the wildest, craziest years in human history, I think. So let's hope we can get through the next 2 months and start anew in a hopefully better year.
Oh, that's so very optimistic of you, Greg.
Gotta work the optimistic gimmick for a little while longer.
We'll see how long it takes for that to gimmick. Die. Yeah.
Might be by the end of the night.
Might be. See what we can do.
Depending on how the not to tell tales out of skewel, but depending on how the ballots come in tonight, it may be.
Monitor our demeanor throughout the course of the podcast. I suppose we're trying to minimize distractions here, but you know you can only do so much. Your phone's going to be blowing up. There's going to be things in the background, but you won't hear those, at least not directly. You may hear it in our voices.
But luckily, people aren't talking about this at the airport. What they're talking about at the airport is all the exciting matches WCW's got to bring up. I mean, everywhere you go in the airport, people are asking about, you know, who's Vader going to wrestle next? And so, you know, I think that's really, really the topic of the day.
Yeah, can't pick a bigger distraction, I don't think, than Big Van Vader. So I'm excited to dig into this. Have somehow all chosen matches from the same year, which I think is a first in 17 episodes of this show. So that year is 1993, and the first match is Greg's pick. Greg, what did you pick?
I picked from Super Brawl 3, I believe it was 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir.
It is the White Castle of Fear strap match between the WCW World Heavyweight Champion, the Van they call Vader, and Man they call Sting. This was the purportedly anyway the culmination of a nearly year-long feud between WCW's biggest babyface, their biggest star, and WCW's biggest heel at the time, They had been, you know, at war for the previous year. Vader dominated the early going. Sting had finally gotten the upper hand in a match that we reviewed right here on this podcast in the King of Cable tournament finals, coming out on top with a victory over Vader. And then and that leads us into that victory. The King of Cable gives Sting his opportunity to go after Vader again. But first, he had to meet Vader inside the White Castle of Fear make this official.
Ooh.
So I found this White Castle of Fear vignette, extremely sexually charged.
Oh, yes.
Vader.
The acting was on par with something you would watch that is explicitly sexually charged. Mm-hmm. By Sting. Of course, he's not too hard on the eyes either. And it just took a very fetishistic, if that's a word I can use, overtone towards the end, where you've got these these large men in skin tight black clothing, and a strap comes into play. And what's going to happen here? I mean, are we setting up for a wrestling match, or is there another innuendo perhaps at play here?
And was I insane, or were they like the camera seemed to focus really hard on the fire that was in the middle of the strap as they're going back and forth, but it didn't appear that the fire was actually doing anything. Looked as if the strap was.
You're saying it's not hot?
That's what I'm saying. It looked as if the strap was maintaining its structural integrity, thus begging the question, what was the point of all those shots of the fire?
I thought it was pretty clear that the fire was melting the strap.
Well, maybe it was, but
that saved Sting.
But they should have shown it. I want to see how. Okay, I want you to put yourself in the small shoes of a 9-year-old child in 1993, and you're waking up one Saturday morning. Actually, I would have been 8. I hadn't even turned 9 yet. You wake up one Saturday morning and you turn on WCW Worldwide or Pro or Main Event or whatever it was, and they're showing the White Castle of Fear segment, and you're thinking to yourself, my God, that's Sting, my hero, the greatest actor in the world, Sting. And he's being pulled towards a flame with this strap around him, and he's in Vader's house, he's in Vader's mansion that he lives in that was never mentioned before this or after this again, and he's surrounded by Cheatham, the evil small man, and the people watching from the side, and Harley Race, who doesn't fit the motif at all of this whole thing, and you're asking yourself at the end of it, you're a kid. Does Sting make it out? Is Sting even still alive? I have to know these. Obviously, we know now that he survived it, but like, how? How did he escape the White Castle here? How did he, you know, he looked like he was going to be pulled into the fire and burned alive. He looked like, and even if he got away, even if the strap broke, as you suggest, how does he then escape the White Castle? I mean, he was dropped off there. I can't remember how he was dropped off there, but he was dropped off there,
a
helicopter. Right. And, He's got to somehow get out of there. He doesn't have a helicopter to bring him back, I'd assume.
Well, you know, I think they set that up with his line as he was making his approach. There's something familiar about this place. We don't learn what it is, of course, but maybe.
But there was something.
But maybe that was their out. You know, some people would call that a plot hole of this WCW mini movie, which they made several of. In the great year 1993. But I think it's their out, their back door.
Well, it's kind of like the Joker. You don't have to reveal his origin. Sometimes the best things are best left as mysteries.
Exactly. I'm stunned, quite frankly, at your lack of respect to this cinematic masterpiece.
I'm just saying, great art should leave you asking questions. And,
right.
And that's what happened here. I left asking so many questions that it almost defies reason. One of the other questions, you know, I think a good way out, what if it was revealed when Sting said something's very familiar about this, what if it's revealed that he was just walking onto a set that was actually at, you know, Center Stage in Atlanta, and he's like, oh, that's why it's familiar, we're just right next door to where I wrestle. That could have been an out. Do you think there's a tie between the White Castle of Fear and the Dungeon of Doom?
Oh, yes. I think there must be.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Sting is the long thought dead prince of the Castle of Fear, the White Castle of Fear, and that he has returned to his birthplace, and that's why it seems familiar to him. But he's had amnesia.
And that's why he only has one name, Sting.
Yes, and just like white Logan hair, too.
Mm. Yeah, just like Logan in the comics. What a theory. I like this theory.
Well, it wouldn't be the first WCW wrestler of 1993 afflicted with amnesia either. So this may have been a pattern that they were establishing. And, you know, as far as that fire that doesn't burn, you mentioned the Dungeon of Doom. Is there a connection there? Of course, the water that's not hot. I think that the fire was a pseudo-sexual mystical portal to the dungeon, which is actually beneath the White Castle of Fear. But it has to transport you there. It teleports you, but it's, you know, distance-wise, it's beneath the White Castle.
So that's where Sting went.
They are connected.
He was pulled into the portal.
Yeah, he probably found his way back out through the dungeon. Which I know the dungeon would debut years later, but it's fine.
It's the origin, though.
The origin of the unseen right. origin of the dungeon. Yes, that was the unproduced WCW mini movie.
Tragic. Yeah, no, that, you're right. That's the one that should have happened. That could have tied all of this together, and made it really make sense in the grand scheme of things.
But this whole thing so voyeuristic. I mean, these random valets and Cheatham, the little person.
A one-eyed little person.
Yes, the one-eyed little person. It's it's just so suggestive.
Mm. Imagine if this was
especially with one eye. I mean,
does this not seem like the setup for a Chappelle Show skit?
Yes.
You've got the one-eyed dwarf, you've got Harley Race, and you've got this big fat guy in a mask, and then you've got the Mastodon helmet in the middle.
Or even
that helmet was amazing.
What was the? No one's gonna know what this is. What was the mid '90s Mike Myers the SNL? I don't even know if it was a recurring skit. It was supposed to be some kind of German expression show called
Sprockets. Sprockets. Dieter. His character Dieter on Sprockets. Yes. Yeah. Now is the time of Sprockets when we dance.
That's what this is. An installment of Sprockets.
And of course. So, of course, after seeing this incredible extravaganza of special effects and wizardry, we settle it in an old-fashioned strap match.
Mm.
And correct me if I'm wrong, what was the WCW Championship on the line here?
So, I believe it was. I am in doubt because it is 1993 WCW. but what I do
you know exactly where I'm going.
Yeah. But what I do know is that Sting did defeat Vader in the King of Cable tournament, a match we talked about on a previous edition of TNWCW. That was a Sting episode. And that was at Starrcade of 1992. Sting, you know, redeemed himself from his loss earlier in that year. Vader, oddly enough, even in defeat, went on to recapture the WCW World Heavyweight Championship from Ron Simmons right after Starrcade. I actually watched that match, almost chose that match in anticipation of this episode, but found one I liked a bit better. But yeah, so Vader did regain the title, which it's sort of weird, right? That Vader lost that King of Cable match and then goes on to that's the type of thing like they explain away as, oh, it's a contract rematch clause or something. Like, doesn't matter what his recent record is. He's right. getting the rematch.
He was already signed on the dotted line to get mm-hmm. this match. And so, you know, yeah, it is kind of weird, but WCW was nothing if not inconsistent with their
decision. So bottom line is he did regain the title going into 93. And yeah, I probably should know if it was on the line here, but,
you know,
it turns out it doesn't really matter. So
the really important thing here was that it was a grudge match between two guys that hated each other. Sting finally got a chance to give Vader back a little bit of the aggression that Vader had given him the prior year. They're strapped to one another. As a rule, by the way, I hate strap matches. Sure. Or what is that other stipulation match?
Chain.
the chain match or the dog collar, the bull rope match. I generally don't like that stipulation because I kind of think it's lame touching four corners to win a match.
You don't like when wrestlers are joined as if by an umbilical cord.
Right. I think when it works. No, right. I like it when it works. Like when it works to me is when it's like Piper and Valentine. That works. And I like the strap as a weapon. I love the strap as a weapon.
Oh, yeah,
I prefer strap matches where it's pin or submission and they're just strapped to each other.
Yeah,
I don't like the touch the four corners thing, but that's what this is. This is a touch the four corners match. But oddly enough, they keep emphasizing that you have to drag your opponent to each corner. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, like, well, given the size of the WCW ring and the length of the strap,
you don't have to.
You don't really have to do that. No, you can just drop around and ring. slap the corner post. But nonetheless, the wrestlers are game, and so they work within that restriction during the match. And one of the things that stood out to me is they started out the way they always start out. Vader's trying to intimidate Sting, but Sting is not backing down this time. He's not going to give an inch. And really what's different about this match is Sting starts it off aggressive, similar to how he did King of Cable, which showed that he learned his lesson from prior matches. And he ends up getting the advantage here. And he just lays into Vader's back with this strap. Mm-hmm. And boy, oh boy, Vader's back is really showing it. And you could tell Sting was enjoying giving Vader back a little bit after all the potatoes, I'm sure, that Vader had given him the prior year. Mm-hmm. And some in this match, too. So Vader's back is all bleeding and busted open. He rolls out of the – Vader, of all people, having to roll out of the ring and recuperate. The crowd's way into this. The crowd is super into Sting. Super into him getting his revenge on Vader. The human cauliflower, Harley Race, is there at ringside cheating whenever he can. And so Vader, of course, comes back in, gets the advantage. And every time Sting looks like he's got the match in hand, Vader will make a comeback and take the advantage over again and then start using his brute force and his size and his power. But, of course, Sting being Sting, he won't die. Keeps coming back. Huge comebacks, perfectly timed, every single time out. They're just beating the holy hell out of each other. I will say, out of all their matches, this is definitely the most violent. This is definitely the most physical of their matches because they are laying into each other. Like, there's one point, and this comes later in the match, near the end, Vader pops Sting with one of his patented right hands, and Sting hits him with a right hand flurry and then does a spinning back fist that looks like it just clobbers Vader right in the face. Mm-hmm. And then Vader retaliates and knocks Sting down. And then there's this great spot late in the match when Sting gets Vader in the corner and just starts unloading with right hands and keeps going to like 17 in a row as Vader's draped across the bottom rope looking like he's unconscious. Another thing that made this match stand out to me, very rarely in those days could you ever tell if Sting was bleeding. In this match, they make it a point that Sting is bleeding. He's busted open by Vader. His face paint is caked off. It's gone, as it often happened in long matches. And Vader has busted him open. So you've got the rare image of a bleeding Sting firing up on Vader in the corner. Absolutely tremendous. And then Vader's ear, I think, gets busted open at one point.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he's bleeding all over, as Jesse the Body is saying, Vader's bleeding all over the ring, Tony.
Bleeding all over the ring.
Bleeding all over the ring. Vader hits a big superplex at one point that looks like it could end the match. He hits the splash off the top early in the match, which looks like it might end it quickly. Sting quickly comes back, hits him with the splash. Little bit of a tit for tat there, back and forth. Sting at one point rips off Vader's mask in disgust and throws it down. Good stuff all around here from both guys. Violent offense. There's this incredible power spot where Sting lifts Vader up on his shoulders and carries him all the way around the ring. Seems like not the smartest idea in the world, but nonetheless, he carries this man all the way across the ring to slap all the corners, eventually tripping over useless Nick Patrick, and who is just awful. And I just love Nick Patrick, but God Almighty, his counts. We'll get to that later on. But anyway, he does okay in this match because he doesn't have to count. So Sting trips over him, falls down. with Vader on him. But what a feat of strength by Sting to do that. That's all him. You know, Leon just has to balance himself. And incredible stuff there. Vader with a little bit of an assist from Harleen Race gets the advantage. Vader bombs, drags Sting all the way around, and then Sting fights back one last time before the last corner and kicks Vader into the last corner to get the win. Outstanding match. Probably my favorite strap match that I've ever seen.
I would agree with that, and I'm kind of similar to you in that I don't like the touch the four corners style strap matches, because what happens, right? They always do the cliche spot where the one guy thinks he's got his opponent down, drags him around like in a hangman's noose position, hits the corners, doesn't realize his opponent is touching them right behind him. Oh, no, we've never seen that before. Now we have to fight over the fourth one. But they don't do that.
Yeah, or the classic Sting and Nikita Koloff finish, where like they do that, and then Sting does the Stinger splash into the corner, which technically counts as a corner touch,
right?
On Nikita Koloff. So, yeah. Well, anyway,
something I thought they did a little bit different on this early in the match is Sting tries to drag Vader around the ring on the outside.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
The corner. Yeah. So yeah, I'd also never seen that. Thought that was a pretty good. Little change up, because I know some people do feel that way about the touch the corners thing. It never bothered me, but I did appreciate Sting's attempt to be different there.
Yeah, there's no bullshit in this strap match. It's not the spots that you would expect. You have that creativity, like you said, touching them on the outside. And I think an inversion of that very familiar spot I was talking about with, you know, the bigger opponent dragging his lifeless prone adversary around the ring. Well, this is Sting dragging Vader around on his back, which who thought they would see that?
It was amazing.
It is. I mean, he almost lost him at several points, but I mean, they pulled it off. Right. So I just like the originality and what they did with the rules of this strap match. And obviously the brutality of it. You see a real power display from Sting, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times you'll get Sting, and whatever your feelings are on the guy, you look at his offense and it's, I don't know, for lack of a better word, a little bit, we'll see, like he has sort of a light touch. Kind of flashy. Looks,
well, it's baby face.
Yeah. Looks cool, but you know, it's like a... It's not really going to hurt anybody. Like,
he's not stiff. Yeah,
he's not stiff at all. No. There's no suggestion.
He's a safe.
As opposed to Vader, who definitely is.
Right.
So to see him really step it up here and work more of a power offense, like he drops Vader with a deep German suplex at one point that looks really awesome. They have like this exchange of Samoan drops, which again, you wouldn't think of a guy Sting size being able to pull off on Vader, but he does. Those splashes off the top rope looked really snug, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Sting with his great vertical leap, of course, it's going to look spectacular no matter what. But yeah, Greg, to your point, I would agree that Sting must have reveled and the opportunity to step up his game here. I think a lot of wrestlers, when they go against Vader, having the reputation that he does for being so stiff, are like, God damn, you know, after two matches are like, fuck this. I don't want to work with this. I don't want to work with this guy anymore. He's going to fucking kill me.
Yeah.
And for Sting, of all wrestlers, to be like, no, okay, third match, bring it on. And he doesn't just roll over. He really gives it back. Between the strap and the punches and just everything, it's like we see a side of Sting that we didn't know was there probably until this match.
Absolutely. I think it's important. You know, Sting is that prototypical babyface, but I think any great babyface, you have to be able to see once in a while, you have to be able to see the violent side come out of them. The fact that they can dig down and reach that level of brutality that is necessary at times. And I thought this was that moment for Sting to step up and be really violent for probably the first time in his career. to have to be that level of, you know, to have to be stiff and have to, like, you know, almost fight for his life, you know, because that's what Vader's going out there and doing, is hitting you for real. So he better fire it back at him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, we're talking a lot about Sting, but Vader worked really hard for Sting. Like, Sting wasn't doing all that shit on his own.
No.
Vader, for his size and, like, just his look, but you can tell that he helps the guys make them look like that. You know, he knows how to, like, use his body in a way to make moves look devastating. And he is just bleeds, you know, front and back. And just is a whipping boy, several points for Sting in this. So, like, I loved his selling of everything. I thought he looked amazing, like, just super intimidating and somebody you would not want to be attached by a strap with. You know,
right,
I mean?
A monster. Yep.
Just absolutely, but
like, a monster that is vulnerable.
You know? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Sting gets him off his feet, you know, several times, but he's such a huge presence. And this is, like, a fantastic match. Like, I super enjoyed watching it and was surprised by how much actual wrestling they got in. And it wasn't just, like we've said, the typical dragging strap match and actual
punch, kick,
like,
strap. Yeah.
Fantastic, like, power moves during the entire thing. So awesome stuff.
Well, and I'm glad you called attention to Vader in that way, because what I believe sets him apart from other great super heavyweights, and I think he is one of the great super heavyweights. We talked about the Giant in our last episode, so kind of a logical progression from there. Vader is somebody who I don't know that I've ever seen him, I mean, maybe later in his career, but in WCW, you don't see him get blown up in the ring. You don't see him get winded. Nope. I mean, he is kind of slow moving. He can be kind of lumbering, but you don't see him sucking wind. Like, he's not pouring sweat or turning Brock Lesnar purple, right? Like, he hangs in there.
He has that endurance that you would not expect, especially because he bleeds so much.
Yeah,
and, you know, he's so big and just like, it's amazing.
There is, I think we talked a little bit about this on the Giant episode, but not much, because he wasn't necessarily an expert at this at that time, like he became later on. But there's an art to big man selling, and it's something that very few are good at. The Undertaker's always been really good at it. The Big Show became very, very good at it. Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow were awesome at it back in the day. Vader, and what I mean by that is, like, you don't want your big man to be bumping around like a cruiserweight, but you need him to know when to bump to keep his monster aura about himself, but also to make the babyface look strong and to make himself look vulnerable. So, good example. Sting will bounce off of Vader 3-4 times in a row, fires up, finally hits him with that big move that takes him off his feet, and Vader takes a powerful bump off of it. Not like a wussy bump or a barely falling over bump. Then the other thing that Vader does selling wise that to me sets him apart, what that moment I talked about earlier where Sting was firing up on him in the corner, and granted, some of those were stiff shots, but Vader's selling of that corner beatdown, knowing how to slowly slump down in the corner and keep feeding Sting, and then finally to the point where he's down there and he's draped over the bottom rope looking like he's unconscious, that is selling 101. And it's interesting, Tim, that you, it's kind of awesome that you mentioned Brock Lesnar, because I was going to mention him in a different light, because that's kind of what I thought about when I was watching all of these matches. But this match in particular, Vader was the Brock Lesnar of his era.
Yeah,
he just had a different aura about him than anybody else on the roster. It felt like a real fight when he was involved. And much like Brock Lesnar, he was so underrated in his ability to sell for his opponents. And know exactly how to make his opponent look the best in each big moment. He knew how to feed the babyface comebacks big time. So, awesome match. Actually better than I remembered it being, because since I was a 9-year-old kid, I've always hated the finish, because I thought the build-up to this match was, I was so certain that Sting was going to win this match. I was like, finally, Sting's going to win the championship again. He's finally, you know, it's because it's like I thought of it as like a Hollywood movie. You know, the good guy gets beaten by the bad guy and then takes a long time to redeem himself and then comes back and conquers the bad guy in the end. And that didn't happen here. It was kind of that sort of kissing your sister finish where they keep Sting strong in a way, but Vader wins the match fairly decisively. You know, he taps the fourth corner and yet they try to sort of keep Sting strong there. And I don't know. It's kind of a deflating finish, but watching it back as an adult, it's not as bad as I remembered it when I was a kid. The execution is fine, but it's still kind of, I don't know. I still feel like there are better ways out of it. Like if you really want to go that route and have Vader get lucky, I feel like they could have had him cheat a little bit more. Like,
yeah.
Have Harley come in there and really do something to Sting that causes him to not be able to get it other than just tripping over Nick Patrick, which really is, think about it, is Sting's fault. I mean, Nick Patrick was right there and
right.
Sting could have just, I don't know, dropped Vader and walked over, you know.
But it was a little abrupt in the ending, anticlimactic, you know, to end the show that way.
It's like they just had the hottest spot, which was Sting's carrying him around the ring, and then there's like a minute and a half to 2 minutes of kind of action after that, of Vader pretty much just dragging him around. It didn't feel like the finish really matched the rest of the match. But again, that's a nitpick because the match is incredible.
I was going to say largely the same, that as good as the match is, I do ding it for that ending a little bit, just because as all of us seem to agree, it was a bit abrupt. I don't like that Sting basically slips on a banana peel, makes him look a bit foolish. I mean, Sting looking foolish, take a drink, right? But
Ric Flair was in the audience that night too.
Yeah, exactly. You can tell that big return, right?
Yeah. If you look in the audience, you can tell that Ric Flair is sweating profusely, trying to resist the urge to go in and turn on Sting.
That's what they should have done. Have Flair run in and cost him.
Yes.
And then just get back to commentary. So yeah, I definitely don't love that ending. But I will say they make it clear that this is like very much a moral victory for Sting, because he's at the end of, after the bell, he's still in the ring standing strong. Vader looks like absolute hamburger meat. Mm-hmm. I mean, is just demolished. And you think, well, it's like Vader kind of won on a technicality, but I mean, Sting is the one walking out of here with his head held high. You know, he proved he could beat Vader in that match at Starrcade. Here, and I thought the commentators did a good job of selling this idea that coming into this match, he's very much at a disadvantage, you know, size-wise, and given the rules of the match, a strap match, touch the corners, would seem to favor a large man like Vader, you know? And yet Sting was the one who really dominated.
And they also talked about how Vader's goal in the match was to end Sting's career, to put him out for good, because that would be his number one threat to the title gone. Yeah. And so...
did not succeed in that.
Did not succeed in it. And so, you know, you see the heel failed in his mission.
But these two just had such electric chemistry. I always go back and forth between this and the Starrcade match as like my favorite meeting of theirs, but after watching this again, shit. Like, I don't know, dude. They both look like $1 million.
Yeah, they never had a bad match with each other. All their matches against each other were awesome. But yeah, these two back to back, King of Cable and the Strap Match, are probably their two best matches. As far as like, you know, their Great American Bash match is different because it's sort of a different animal. It's telling a different story. These two matches are competitive, incredible, hard-fought matches. The first one was really an extended beatdown.
Yeah.
Well, sure. A couple of months down the road, we come to Slamboree 1993. That is in May. And Tim's choice. Which match did you pick, Tim?
Okay, so yeah, I went with the van they call Vader versus the British Bulldog. Davey Boy Smith, who They do call the British Bulldog in this match. I know there's always some kind of... Nobody ever seems quite sure, could they get away with calling him British Bulldog? Well, they do. It's just he's... The graphic will say Davey Boy Smith. Mm-hmm. And
Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog!
Thank you, Gary Michael Capetta. And so he was a nice little pickup for them in early 1993.
Even though he was fooked on the drug crack cocaine?
He was still very fooked out of his mind on crack cocaine, Brett. But I think they got about as much utility out of him as they could in 1993. And I thought they turned in a decent little match here. And it's one that I chose because, look, I love large men throwing bombs at each other. And it's my favorite, my preferred style of wrestling, if I'm being quite honest. I think when that's done well, I've said this before, when a big hoss fight, a big power match is done well, it's just the best kind of wrestling.
What is it, a friend of the show? He's not really a friend of the show. I wish he was.
Enemy
what
of the
is
show.
It, friend of the show, Big E says? Big meaty men slapping meat?
Yeah. He is a friend of the show. Why not?
Well, I wish he would be. I mean, if you're out there, Big E, if somebody could put us on your radar, that would be awesome.
Love his moves. He knows what he's talking about. And... this is a match that I don't think, I mean, this feud really doesn't get talked about at all because they did have something of a little mini feud here. Now, there's the infamous Beach Blast encounter, the tag match.
Ah.
The Masters of the Powerbomb versus yes. Smith and Sting. So yes. Continuing the Sting rivalry, you get Davey Boy in the mix too. I mean, I almost chose that, but I don't know.
I forgot about that, honestly.
Yeah, it was just...
How can you forget about Sid and his flip-flops?
I know, I don't know. That's crazy.
On the beach, yeah, another great mini-movie.
Yeah, I love that mini-movie.
God, the year of the mini-movie.
Yes.
So this...
I don't know why, but I just started thinking back to Sid's promo from WrestleMania 8, where he says, "Ah, curse you, Hulk Hogan."
Out of context, Sid memory.
Yes.
Every Sid memory that you'll have in your life is out of context. I promise you.
Sid should have starred in every mini. Sid should have starred in every movie, period.
Every movie that has ever been made, yes.
Yeah. Just such an enhancement.
Yes.
Okay, so what's the story here? Basically, Davey Boy Smith is fighting for the honor, I gather, of his fallen comrades, Sting, who we just talked about, and Cactus Jack, who, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about. And so he's coming into this as sort of the new kid on the block, the new challenger. I don't know why I used that analogy, but I'm going to stick with it. And, God, I just love the build of a dominant fighting heel champion who's a monster, leaving this trail of bodies in his wake. And that's kind of where Vader was at this point in 93. So this is Slamboree. It's a Legends reunion, by the way. And it is from the Omni, our favorite WCW venue, of course. And fans are pretty into it. Great power exchange. Breathtaking strength by Davey Boy Smith. I thought at many, many points in this match. And y'all know I always go up for shit like that. Holy shit, that hanging... Vertical suplex.
Oh my
Lord
God.
Have mercy.
And
I was not expecting that.
Woo, yeah. Me either, buddy.
Ooh. And I love how there's.
Up.
And it was perfect. It wasn't like he struggled or.
Mm-mm.
I love the very pregnant setup that they do where it's.
Yes.
Are they going to pull
They're
this off?
They're talking to each other right there, are they not?
Yeah. And I want you to, if you watch that suplex, look how perfectly Vader goes up. The form is incredible.
His legs, he looks like a ballet.
Straight
dancer.
As an arrow.
It's amazing.
That is one of the greatest postures for a suplex I've ever seen anybody give.
And for
Shawn Michaels couldn't have done that any better.
No. Oh, unbelievable. And he follows that up with like a power slam, catching Vader coming off.
That was the one. So the suplex was awesome, but the one that caught me the way that Jenny did, the one that made me like freak out like Scott Steiner when he hit those suplexes in tag matches, was Vader goes for the crossbody in the corner, and Davey Boy Smith catches this and
catches him in midair like he's a cruiserweight.
But carries him like 3 or 4 feet and slams him. If
he's
that's what
this man like, he's moving to Guerrero.
If that's what you can do when you're fooked on crack cocaine, I'm gonna give you some fresh cocaine.
Hit me on that juice.
Yeah, holy shit.
It was gorgeous.
Oh, and I mean, and Vader, of course, is his power offense on full display, just flattening Davey Boy with that flying clothesline off the middle rope that he does. That it's like an avalanche sledge. I don't even know what to call it. Pretty sure Bulldog gets busted open hard way on some of this.
There's a moment where Vader goes for a splash off the ropes on Davey Boy, mm-hmm. and he misses it pretty badly. And Davey Boy, I think, gets hurt, gets busted open his head, and Vader injures his esophagus or something. He instantly goes shit as soon as he hits the mat.
Yep.
And starts clutching his chest area. I don't know why I said esophagus, but it's like diaphragm area.
On Davey's head, I think.
Yep, exactly. And of course, that's the best place to hit Davey Boy Smith. So he's not going to feel any ill effects of it. He's already, he's Davey Boy. But the brain's operation.
There was a spot where Bulldog, he tries to use that crucifix pin that looked pretty cool for a guy of his size to do, and he'd done it a few times. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he gets his legs around Vader's back, Vader just drops and splatters him on that pin attempt. And I was just like, good God. Connects with the Vader bomb. That's usually it for most guys. Bulldog impressively survives. We get a kick on that. So now we're getting into my favorite, overindulgent bullshit territory.
Yes.
With massive kickouts. But no one looks at their hands or looks to the sky or throws up three fingers or questions it. They just keep going. And it's fantastic. Great exchange on the outside as well. Vader took a really gross-looking bump across the guardrail at one point. And basically lands in this lady's lap, who is rather nonplussed.
Imagine getting a lap full of Vader.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's your WCW audiences. It's like all kids and old people, right?
Old ladies, yeah.
This old lady is just game for it. But, again, Bulldog just hauling Vader back, like right across the guardrail. Didn't look like he got a lot of help there. And right into a slam. Hits his power slam back in the ring, but cannot capitalize. We do get a rather bullshit fuck finish, I will say, with the chair shot.
Brutal.
Yeah, it's a gross chair shot, though, because it's not your folding chair. It's like a seated chair. I don't know what you call that style chair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a chair. Not, chair? A regular chair?
Good. I mean, good God. That's the only thing that maybe that's why 93 WCW was such a turnoff for me in general, was that the finishes are so deflating every time. It's like we watched this
hard
awesome
to find three matches
fight.
That have like three really good solid finishes. I mean, you sort of work what you've got.
Yeah.
And we didn't set out to choose all 1993 matches.
No.
It just kind of worked out that way. I almost didn't, but I was like, as bad as 2020 has been for everyone, 1993 is a really good year for Vader. So.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. Like the work and the matches is so good, and it's just like, damn. If only the I don't know if it was Dusty or Ole or who it was at that time, but whoever it was, if they could have given them better, more climactic finishes, even if you have to keep it going, I think a disqualification or a count out there is not what you want to see after a big hoss fight like that.
Yeah. Well, there is a fun bit at the end with like a couple of mid-carders running in.
I cackled when this dude in pants jumps in the ring and Tony goes, "Bagwell's here," and then Vader just flattens him immediately.
Scorpio gets his suit.
Scorpio comes out, gets his fucking shit pushed in.
Yeah, he gets his shit pushed in. Now,
who are these blonde mulleted guys that came out at the very end after Vader had left? They come in and join the rest of the baby faces.
Blonde mulleted guys was one of them.
Nasty boys. Brad Knobs.
I feel like one of them had to be Shane Douglas, right? Like,
yeah, probably. That means somebody got their ass franchised.
He got his ass.
Wait, May of 93. I think he was probably doing something else. Was he gone by then? Probably, yeah.
Well, I don't know. In any case, looks like Bulldog's going to get the powerbomb. Sting interrupts that, makes the big save. Nice dramatic moment, although I did want to see a powerbomb. I wanted to see like these mid-carders get powerbombed. Like, out of
too.
That would have, like,
poor Joe Thurman. Tim, think about Joe Thurman.
Oh. Powerbomb him, too. Powerbomb them all. Just that would totally make up for the fuck finish for me if I'd seen some jobbers eat that powerbomb.
So, we cannot go an entire episode talking about 1993 Vader without addressing the fact that his manager is Harley Race, the legendary world champion.
Please, yes.
Yes.
Let's just open this discussion up. What do we think about Harley Race, manager of Vader?
It's funny that you asked that because it was one of my points that I had about the other match that I neglected to mention. But when I think about like managers, Race, I feel like, is at the bottom or middle pack of that. But like when you think about him with Vader, like that pairing, I feel like is just spot on and super hot. They're just so like gross and nasty together. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
hey, you want a funny visual? Imagine Harley Race's hair on Vader's head.
God.
Just Harley Race's hair in general. Like, he's just so like nasty. He looks like the KKK member in like a movie about the 60s, you know. he has just gross vibes, and same with Vader, and just that pairing with them just makes me fear. Like, it's true fear thinking about them together, like Harley cheating and you know, being dastardly on the sidelines, and Vader just fucking killing people in the ring. So it's a deadly combination with these two.
You feel the fear. The fear is here. The fear is me. The fear is real. The fear. You feel the fear.
Play the pain game. No pain.
Also, Vader can't talk, so he needs Harley.
No pain.
I mean, Harley kind of can't either, but
true.
They have like that same voice, and it's like, I don't know. Harley is almost
Vader gets you in the ring, he's gonna rip you limb from limb.
I see what you're saying, where he's like this old movie villain. It definitely feels like
it's
that.
It's like Boss Hogg from Boss Hogg. Fucking perfect. Whatever that show is.
Yeah.
Dukes of Hazzard. That's who he reminds me of.
It's like it shouldn't work, but it kind of does. I mean, some people don't think it works at all and that it takes away from Vader. I guess I can see that. It's like, okay, you don't really need a manager for this guy. And Paul Heyman, he is not, right? Like, this is
true.
Stark contrast. But I will say one thing for Harley Race is he will take a bump as a manager and usually does. And it always pops me because, I don't know, something about seeing old man Harley Race in a suit, like getting suplexed or something. It never fails to crack me up.
You know, one thing I think, you know, you guys are raising some great points about Harley as a manager. I was never a big fan of him as a kid because I was a fan of the managers that were really over the top, that were like, you know, Bobby Heenan, Jimmy Hart, Cornette, Paulie. Definitely. But Harley did fit Vader better than those guys probably would have. But the one thing that I wanted to point out in all these matches is Harley cheats fairly frequently. He attacks the baby faces, you know, gouges their eyes and such. And yet it feels like nothing is made of it. Like, the commentators just kind of ignore the fact that, like, they just accept that. There's Harley Race. They're not, like, there's no indignation from Tony except in the last match when Harley gets involved here, it's just kind of like, you know, par of the course at this
point. It's just so expected.
Yeah. It's like normalized. And it's like, you know, I was kind of thinking like, you know, it would probably make me attach myself more to this act if Harley was portrayed more as this dastardly figure who was cheating to help his man get the win.
Who shouldn't need that kind of help, yeah.
Right, exactly. Because Vader doesn't need any help. But yet the fact is he gets help because he's an asshole. So, you know, that's kind of how the feeling should be. Yes, you know?
Exactly.
Well, it's like, who's going to stop them? You know, just right. Like, we can do whatever we want.
Exactly. And Harley Race did have that credibility of being Harley Race, this legendary world champion who so many considered the best of his era. So, you know, when he comes in there, he can take a bump. He can, and when he punches somebody, it's believable that he's punching somebody that's doing damage. Not like, you know, Cornette choking a guy or punching somebody or somebody like that. With Harley Race, there's sort of this, reality to it. Like, yeah, Harley Race probably could kick somebody's
ass.
Seems
like this old mean asshole.
Yeah. Do we feel like he's living vicariously through Vader? Like Vader directing him to do things that he can't do anymore, but he still has that like fire to do.
I like that.
Oh yeah. You can hear the glee in if Harley Race's voice was capable of expressing glee, you would hear the glee in his voice as he's telling Vader to hurt him.
Just constant like encouragement to like totally murder everybody in the ring.
Yep.
And Vader is just sort of a weapon, a gun you can point at somebody with this whole ethos of no pain.
And did another reason why this, I think the Vader did appeal to me as a character as a kid, is he reminded me so much of, at that time in the comic books, Bane was just becoming a thing. And so it was kind of contemporary. All these,
I like that.
You know, Bane was having his run of dominance in the Batman comics at literally the exact same time as Vader was having his run of dominance in WCW, and they both kind of had that sort of final boss feel to them.
Oh man! And the 1991 Vader mask was not unlike Bane's.
The Bane mask,
yeah. And plus, you had the Mastodon headdress also that. Very super villain like, which I wish he had kept that around, you know, throughout
me
the
too.
Entirety
that,
of this
that
run.
Was such a cool thing. That was that was like still to this day one of the coolest things in wrestling. Well, this may be our last chance before we move on. This may be our last chance to talk about Davey Boy in WCW because his run kind of fizzles out as it goes along. And I'll be honest, it's very forgettable to me. Like I don't really remember much about his time in WCW. There wasn't a whole lot to it, but it started out nice and started out with this Vader feud that produced some good matches. And you know, Davey Boy is good in this match. He looks like he's, you know, motivated here. And I think that's an issue with Davey Boy at times. You could tell when he was motivated, when he wasn't. And, here he's motivated, maybe just, you know, show that he's still got it, that he's worth, you know, the contract and all that stuff. Puts in good work in the ring and, you know, seems like he's off to a good start. They couldn't really ever figure out the right role for him, I think, in WCW. Once he got past that initial title challenger role, they couldn't figure out where to position him. And you know, and he wasn't really giving the best efforts throughout the fall of that year. But here early on, it looked like we were off to the races, off to good things. And I have always thought that Davey Boy Smith was very underrated and underappreciated in terms of his in-ring ability. Like he wasn't the best of his era, but he was really good. He was better than most. And he was one of those guys that there's not a lot of matches where you can find where Davey Boy is carrying somebody to a good match, but the guy sure does have a lot of good matches to his resume.
Yeah. I think both guys kept up there under the bargain in this one. It's funny, you know, character-wise, Davey Boy feels a bit like a placeholder for Sting this year. And being plugged into this match against Vader, once again, we see, much like Sting, Vader is willing to kind of work with this guy and bump for him and make him look good. So, once again, it's you know, you can't have the dance without two people. And... it's no great shakes, but I think this is a match that gets overlooked, that you should check out if you haven't thought about it or seen it in a while. They do have a rematch on the August 18th Clash of the Champions. Now, that show is much more notable for a certain shocking debut. But these two go at it again. It's sort of an abbreviated version of this match. It does have an actual finish, though, so I guess maybe it gets points for that. But I like this one better. But maybe check them both out, see how they compare.
Davey Boy's shining moment outside of Vader matches in WCW was he fell right on his fucking horse.
Which you will find as well on that clash.
Just real quick, I think one of my last notes about this match before we wrap it up is that as big as Vader is and agile, and he can, you know, he can hit these like huge power moves, but then the moves that I find myself reacting to sometimes are like the clotheslines and the elbow drops. Like those two moves in particular, he just comes at it with everything, especially the clotheslines. And
those are savage.
Yes. I mean, they're just so brutal. And it looks like it shouldn't be anything. But then he just snaps it off, and it's just devastating. But anyway, that's my last thought about that match. I do really like this match, and I appreciate another really fun Davey Boy match to love.
Awesome.
Okay, before our last match, real quick, I wanted to tell you guys what was happening right here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. The brand new Place to Be podcast, episode number 562, has Justin and Scott with Peter doing the last Saturday night's main event on NBC from April of 1991, so check that one out. Rory is back with a brand new Seen Your Video, not Senior Video, and he is joined by his special relations mates to live watch the best of the British Bulldog, so that's timely. There is a new episode of Jenny and the Gems. It is the best of ECW Volumes 1 and 2 from the Hidden Gem section of the network, and that's a really fun show. On a special weekend episode of the Place to Be podcast, it is the 10th annual Halloween Spooktacular. Tim, you and I were on the mothership, and we watched Beyond the Mat, so that was a fun time. Always fun. I just jump. So,
yeah, horror movie in some respects, you can say.
Yes, with the Jake stuff, that was scary for sure. And on the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and the Doctor discuss episode number 7 of UWN Primetime Live and look ahead to episode number 8, including the shocking debut of a former NXT Cruiserweight champion. On episode 11 of Highway to the Impact Zone, Logan, along with his gang, look back at the 10th episode of Impact and weekly pay-per-view number 107. So you can check out this feed. It has all those great shows and more, plus our pop feed. It has shows like Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Making Mount Rushmore, which Tim, you and I were recently on that show, discussing the 90s It Girls and Guys.
That's right.
So that was a fun episode. Check all that out on the pop feed.
Saucy. Also,
it was very saucy. Also, we still have the greatest WCW match ever project going on. So you still have a couple of months left there to build your ballot and get that in. Also, we have merch now on TeePublic. So you can go to teepublic.com and search PTBW, and that will pull up all of the items there, t-shirts, mugs, and all that stuff, and all the logos from all the shows on the feed. And also placetobenation.com, you can check it out every day. We have articles including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And always, if you're going to be shopping on Amazon, you can click on the banner on the right side of our homepage, and it takes you there, and it helps us out with no cost to you. So that brings us back to Halloween Havoc 1993 and my match pick. So what had happened was...
Thank you for that.
I fell in love with Katniss Jack when I was watching ECW. So I watched several Vader matches and settled on this one because A, it occurs during Halloween Havoc 1993, which features a fantastic and wonderful little, I don't want to call it a mini movie. I don't know if it really qualifies.
I'd call it a mini movie.
You would?
Okay. Yes.
So it has the Tony Schiavone opening with the little kids, including his own, some of his own children, trick-or-treating at his house. I'm pretty sure everybody has seen that. And I love it. I could not resist that. And I could not resist Vader versus Cactus Jack at Havoc 93. But this is a problematic match because it is a Texas Death Match.
It's also and the Wheel Make the Deal match.
Also that.
Which has a problematic history.
Yes. I mean, we can get into that if y'all want to.
Well, why don't we... Okay, to set the stage, these two had kind of a nice little slow burn feud over the better part of the year. You know, alluded to earlier in that Bulldog match at Slamboree Legends Reunion, one of the fallen comrades of the British Bulldog, Cactus Jack, well, he had challenged Vader in a match on WCW Saturday Night. It was on April 17th, I believe, of 93, and scored the upset win in a pretty nifty match. Count out victory, but a win is a win. And Vader was incensed, was irate. Tore the stage up was this center stage still, or was this 1010 Techwood, whatever, tore up the little stage there at WCW Saturday Night, and that led to a rematch the following week, April 24th, that contains the infamous powerbomb on the floor spot. So Vader, in the course of that match at the end, pulls up the mat outside the ring and power bombs Cactus Jack right on the concrete. Oof. And I mean, it looks super sick. It was super sick. Full stretcher job and everything. I mean, they follow him out to the ambulance, pack him off, drive away. And that's that. Like, he is done. And we would not see Cactus Jack for some time after this, but we will catch up with him in the form of another great... This episode could be WCW, the mini movie, talking WCW edition.
Ooh, because, now we need to do that.
Because that gives us Lost in Cleveland. Remember these skits where we're trying to find out what happened, what became of Cactus Jack? Well, as a result of his injuries, both physical and psychological, that he has sustained at the hands of Vader, he now has amnesia, and he's in Cleveland, and that's about the gist of it. You've got a news reporter on behalf of WCW. I don't know why they had news reporters, but they did, apparently, who tracks Cactus Jack down, who is... as I said, lost in Cleveland. It's really goofy. It's sort of like, how does this kind of build to the match? But that's what we did in 1993. So that's how we got here. Do check out those earlier matches, though, on WCW Saturday Night. They are on the network. Highly recommended. I watched them. They're pretty awesome. And we're going to get the spin the wheel, make the deal, bringing back that great stipulation from 92 Havoc, which infamously begot the Coal Miner's Glove match, of course. I guess they had sense to gimmick it this time around. Because we're going to have a Texas death match. Although, I don't know, the rules are still a little bit wonky.
Okay, so. going into it, like, from what I heard initially, it was no DQ.
Falls do not count.
Falls do not count.
I believe it's time for us to dust off an old gym here on the show. And that is, of course, our good friend Jonathan Coachman.
Please.
Who has come in to remind us that the rules are simple, but actually quite complex.
Yeah. Yes.
So in the rules of this particular variation of the Texas Death Match, which for years, as a child, because this was the first Texas Death Match I can remember seeing, and so I grew up thinking these were the rules of all Texas Death Matches. You sure. have to pin, or I guess make your opponent submit, and then, when you pin or make your opponent submit, then there is a 30-second rest period.
Right.
Where both guys get a chance to recover. And then there is a 10-second period where the referee will count you down unless you stand up. So, to be clear, 43 seconds is how long you have to incapacitate your opponent.
So you have to leave him down for a
43 count.
It's a last man standing match with a 43-second count instead of a 10 count.
Well, I thought it was a 15-second count. Instead of 30.
Well, they play very fast and loose with that recovery period, as we see.
They play fast and loose with all the rules in this match. Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's the last man standing, except you also have to pin your opponent first.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love how they present it as no disqualification, falls do not count. But when there is a fall,
it
counts because we have to go into this rest period to allow the person to answer. Not just the recovery period, but the 10 count that will be administered after the recovery period. So you've got quite a bit of time to get to your feet. But if you blow through that recovery period, your ass is still out. They count the 10. I guess that's it. So
somewhere in New York, a young Vince Russo was watching this match and thinking, bro,
this is the future.
I'm going to have reverse Texas death match.
Both opponents start laying down on the floor, and it's whoever gets to his feet and stands for 43 seconds.
It's in reverse because they're risen, resurrected zombies on Halloween.
Yes. Yes, I would watch that. Okay. So I think even Tony gets confused rules, but that's fine. So right away, Cactus attacks on the ramp right away to start it out. The headgear comes off pretty early, which is good. There's some vicious chair shots on Vader on the outside, just right away. We're not even fucking around. Cactus. Yeah, just murders him, bends him over the railing, and then like starts biting on Vader's head, and then hits him with a camera that he fishes from the crowd right there on the front row.
Yes.
So that was awesome.
I love it.
Some more chair shots before we even get into the ring. Then we finally get in there. Just takes his head off with one of those clotheslines that I adore as soon as they get in the ring. And then Cactus gets him over. Vader tries to do the suplex over the ropes onto the ramp, but then Cactus sort of reverses it on him and gets the suplex and slams him down on the ramp. And Cactus is bleeding now as well. They do a belly to back over there on the ramp. Race comes over with a chair, but then Cactus knocks him off and then takes the chair and then beats Vader with the chair, still on the ramp. I love all ramp things.
Yes.
All of that.
And there's no give to it either.
None. It's just Oh, I love that thing. And then so that the part of the set is like this RIP Vader like headstone, and then there's stairs leading down, and they sort of disappear into this hole for a little bit. I call it the grave spot. So Cactus goes down there. You don't see really what happens to Vader, but Cactus comes crawling out of there, bleeding all over his face. And then Vader, in a really well shot spot, like comes like kind of hands and knees crawling up the stairs out of that little spot with the tombstone behind him that says RIP Vader. Pretty artistic, I feel like, for WCW. They have the smoke machine going and the lights are there and he's like struggling out. So it looks like he's just clawing his way from death. Pretty much loved that. That was awesome. Tony talks about how Cactus Jack says that he loves pain. And then as soon as Vader comes crawling out of the grave, he's bleeding. Cactus Jack clotheslines him and then does the pinfall right there on the ramp. Yes. To get that first pinfall. And then they do that rest period. And then Cactus Jack grabs a fake cactus from the set and knocks Vader out with that. They trade punches on the ramp for a little bit. They were both pretty ugly to begin with, Jesse says. So no harm, no foul, as far as them bleeding and like killing each other.
Well, they weren't really much to look for in the look at in the first place, as I say, with marbles in my mouth.
Yeah, you're not going to lose any dates with this one. Gorilla.
Just say gorilla.
Just gorilla. Just say gorilla.
It's rising to mess up and call things that.
So then Cactus says, well, you know what we need? We need a table. So he puts a table up in the ring. In a weird moment, Nick Patrick goes over and like flips the table over.
Yes.
Because I guess the legs were sticking out instead of in. And so he flips it over. Help
you out, prompting Jesse to say, what's he doing? Setting it up for Cactus Jack?
I was dying.
Business exposing.
I have like a weird thing about table setups. Like I don't know where it comes from, but I'm always watching the table setup. So when Nick Patrick just blatantly goes over there and fixes it, I'm like losing my mind. Like, what's he doing?
I think I know what you're talking.
You know what?
It's a nervousness because I'm always nervous that they're going to forget to flip the table and somebody's going to get badly hurt by falling on those pronged legs, you know?
I think that your table setup is my clearing off the table. The announcer's table.
Yeah.
Right. So that the guy doesn't get hurt when you powerbomb him through it. Right. It's such a guy. Like, I hate that so much.
Me watching ECW, watching Pitbull 2 set up tables while chained to somebody else is like everything. But anyway.
Yeah. It's like there was some match a long time ago. And I might have even been in WWE actually that there was I can't remember if it was a table leg that was stuck up or a chair that was stuck up, and they forgot to like flatten out whatever it was, and the dude got like suplexed onto it, and it looked like his anus just fell right on the damn thing. And I was like, oh my God. And he was like legitimately hurt from it. And I was like, God almighty. Now I like every time I just cringe thinking they're gonna forget to do that. And it's like
right in the anus.
That Vader chair shot where he had the open chair. I was like, what a reckless chair shot. Like, good Lord, man. Anyway, Mick Foley's a madman, by the way.
God, he's so awesome. He tries a sunset flip off the side onto the floor and misses that. And then he throws Vader into the railing by his giant gut, which is awesome. So now they're in the crowd. Vader dumps Cactus back over the railing and then brings a chair with him. Just knocks the shit out of him.
God.
Then they start doing the race taser. Taser, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah. I struggled with that a little bit too. I think it's a very 1993 movie taser, right?
Right.
Yes.
Which I guess those are real things.
It's like a prop taser.
Yeah.
Complete with like the blue electric line.
Totally.
Yeah, and like it makes noise, like that noise that you mentioned earlier. And so like it's pretty obvious, the ending now, you know, kind of ruin it. Thanks, Harley. But anyway, right, yeah, a little bit. There's a moonsault off the top for a pinfall for Vader. And then that 15-second rest period, they stand up, and then punches in the corner, throws Cactus onto the ramp, and then do like a backdrop onto one of the chairs.
Is this when Cactus is, he's like, it's like a piggyback position?
Yeah, jumps on the sleeper.
He rides him Vader just on the ramp.
Good. That had to be the most. And I think Mick wrote. I need to go back and read Mick's autobiography, his first one. By the way, one of the best wrestling books out there. If you haven't read it, do so. But I think he wrote that that was the most painful moment in his career to that point.
Was in a, I want to say it was in a match with Vader. It might have been in this match, but I do definitely remember him calling attention to that spot specifically because he thought he was going to be so injured, and he kind of, I mean, he says basically he planned it this way. He was like, man, I was run down. I wanted time off. I kind of need an excuse for time off. So I figured, let me take a really spectacular bump, get legit injured, and that's a vacation. He thought he was going to be so fucked after taking this bump that, you know, he'd have to take time off, basically. And turns out he wasn't as messed up as he thought he was going to be.
Like, yeah, he said it was the worst possible outcome because not only was I not as injured as I wanted to be, but I was in more pain than I'd ever been in my life.
There we go.
He's piggyback on Vader, and then Vader just legit takes his entire body and just boom, just drives him onto that chair.
It's disgusting.
It really is.
And it's not in the ring. It's on the damn ramp, which is just.
God. The things that man put his body through in pro wrestling are just unbelievable.
We don't deserve it.
No.
We really don't.
No.
So then,
God bless you, Mick Foley.
Yes. Then Vader picks up the chair and murders Cactus Jack further with that. And then does the DDT on the chair. So by this point, the refs check in on Cactus, the trainers, the paramedics come out to check on them, but then Vader chases them off with the chair, covers for the pin, and then they do the rest period again.
Okay.
So they're tied.
I know where you're going, Tim.
Somewhere in here, Cactus DDTs Vader on the chair, just kind of giving a receipt for the one that he got, right? So,
yes. Which, by the rules of the match, should break up the
Yeah, shouldn't the count the then be for Vader? But apparently they're counting both of them.
He's counting both of them, but Cactus hasn't actually pinned Vader yet.
Right.
So,
no, what? He did twice. Cactus had two pins.
No, I mean on this particular sequence.
Oh, well, this
yeah, after yeah, because like DDT. The rule is you have to pin them first, and then you begin the period. And so,
then you have the 10.
Yeah, in this case, Cactus is being counted, gets up to deliver the DDT, which should break the original count in the first place, and then would have to pin Vader to start a count on him. But the ref starts counting both of them down for
some reason.
And
he just forgot what the fuck was happening because he's Nick Patrick and he sucks.
I was the same way, Tim. This is what kind of world are we living in when WCW won't even adhere to the stipulations of their own match?
Cactus got sucked into the gravitational pull of Vader's 10 count.
Yes, that seems right.
Yeah.
So they both start getting counted out, but then Race tases Cactus badly in a terrible, terrible spot. And then Vader simply stands up and wins.
Yeah.
What a shitty finish to a great
booze
match.
Across the entire stadium.
We are three for awesome matches with doo-doo shit finishes.
Doo-doo shits.
This was the worst of the bunch, though. In
right, yeah. Just,
holy
I mean.
Shit.
Just insane. And then Cactus says fuck it and DDT's race right there.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, it was so nice.
Incredible match. Should have been a star-making match for Cactus Jack as a top babyface, but they get the worst damn finish in the world.
And it's another one of those trying to save face, you know, so that the underdog keeps his kind of stay strong, mm-hmm. much like Sting in our first match. But we don't need to be doing all that, you know. Like just give us a decisive like. Either way, we just want a decisive win.
And it could have been just as effective a story if the story is, because nobody had been able to put Vader down, but the story is Cactus Jack has given Vader all he can handle, and Vader finally puts him down, but kind of staggers away, beaten and bloodied, like a, you know, he knows that he's been in the war of a lifetime. You know, that would have sold the match. And then you end the show with the EMTs, you're coming out to attend to Cactus, and he waves, you do the Mankind finish. He waves them off and insists on going back on his own power. And then you can have Tony on commentary putting over what a madman Cactus Jack is, that he's even trying to stand up right now after all that he's been through.
Yeah. Or we can do that.
Just, wow. I mean, this is an insane match. And I think all of the ramp stuff really, really does it for me. Mm-hmm. Like, even with the shit, like, at the end, it's just the ramp is so much a part of the match, and I love it. Like, more than the ring. They bleed so well, and they're just so brutal. And the chair shots here, and the table, I mean, it's all this amazing, brutal, just nonsense that I love.
Vader, I'm pretty sure, blades in this match. But Mick, if I remember correctly, Tim, Mick wasn't fond of blading. And so Mick actually liked Vader to bust him open legit.
Yeah.
And so that's why Mick's eye looks as bad as it does in this match, because Vader legitimately opened him up, I think.
Yeah, and his left eye was just above and below. Fucked up. Yeah. Really bloodied.
I agree with you, Jenny. Great match, even with the shit finish. Incredible match. And again, I was just, this is a Vader episode. Vader was everything that you expect Vader to be in this match. He was tough. He was brutal. He sold when he needed to sell. He actually gave Cactus a ton of offense in this match. Like, mm-hmm. Cactus really took it to Vader, got two visual mm-hmm. pinfalls on him mm-hmm. to start this match. But I just came away just like, it's weird because it was both like an appreciative thing and also kind of a sad thing of like, just Mick Foley was so reckless with his body, not his opponent. Because that's the other thing I noticed is that Vader's out there throwing those Vader potato shots, and Mick, while he was throwing good working punches, they were working punches. You could tell, like, mm-hmm. you know, he wasn't out there trying to kill Vader with every blow. And so he was being really like just controlled with Vader. But when it came to himself, I mean, my God, his hip, he just casually drops that elbow off the ramp onto the concrete. And it's almost like you barely register it. But like, that's his hip falling down like 6 or 7 feet to the concrete.
And that was a signature move for him. He would do that all the time.
Yeah. And so all that to say that, like, we got to see, you know, Vader sell great, and we got to see both of them kind of lay into each other with their offenses. But I think what made this match was Cactus Jack just being insanely dangerous with his own body, like just not afraid of anything, seemingly. It's a remarkable performance and a remarkable match, truly. Like, they had great chemistry, these two guys. But it's like there are certain points in this match where I was like, Jesus, come on. Like, and I guess it's okay because we know that Mick's good. Like, he's as good as you can be after all that stuff. He's one of the greatest exports pro wrestling has had, certainly. Great dude. But yet I'm like, oh, my gosh, the quality of life, you know, like, it's not going to be strong taking these bumps. Great match, though. Loved it.
You know, you say stuff like that, and it's like, you feel for them, and you worry about them and what they've done to their body, but, like, I take it like an appreciation, like, he has no regard for his own self, and that's, like, a selflessness to wrestling that is, whatever it is, admirable, maybe, I don't know, but like, it makes me appreciate him. It's insane. Like, he probably shouldn't do that.
To the point that you,
that's what makes him special. Yeah,
you want to tell him, hey, you don't need to do this, we'll still love you, kind of thing.
Right.
But still kind of do it, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he, and it's what, I mean, let's be honest, that's what drew us to Mick, or what drew me to Mick as a kid.
Yeah.
Was, not just that, obviously. It was all, I actually loved Cactus Jack before I understood pro wrestling and what the, you know, what the nuances were and all that stuff. I didn't understand bumps or any of that stuff, but I knew Cactus Jack was funny. He came out with his, you know, crackling voice and his bang, bang, and all that stuff. And the happy birthday, Sting, all that stuff. You know? Like, I loved Cactus Jack was one of my favorite wrestlers back then because he was funny. He entertained me. And then later on, of course, as I get older, that's when I start appreciating the bumps that he's taking and the craziness that he's doing. And would I have been as attached to Mick Foley if he hadn't done all that crazy stuff? I don't know. It was a different time, of course, but that's kind of what made him special to me. I guess kind of like a different generation had that attachment to Jeff Hardy that I never quite understood that because he was doing things with his body that were so crazy and would give you this sort of car crash effect. And there was always like a genuineness to his character. Even though Cactus Jack is not like Mick Foley in real life, there was always this genuineness about whatever character he was playing. You believed it. And so, you know, you're kind of, I remember as a kid, like, I was thinking, like, where is Truth or Consequences, New Mexico? What has happened there to make this man like this?
You know, I'm in 95 in ECW, and his promos are just fucking next level poetry, like, character, just, it's stunning, and like my appreciation for him is endless, and also for Vader, like Vader just standing with him for the entire match, like he deserves all that as well.
Talk about somebody who's gonna be game for Vader's punishment, Cactus.
Right, Jackson. Yeah, it's the perfect kind of marriage of their styles.
Yeah,
and we get to see a rare Vader moonsault. Not only see the moonsault, but it connects in this match. So I marked out for that, certainly. Again, you're seeing this mix of brutality and actual moves, right? So,
well,
a lovely blend.
It was all of this. You guys are a lovely blend. Any other thoughts, final thoughts about Vader?
Just, you know, for what he was, for that style of character, you're hard-pressed to find anyone better. His ability to, you know, inflict punishment, maybe at times recklessly, but his ability to inflict punishment on his opponents, to be convincing and to sell and you know, bump around was really special for its time. And so I think one of the reasons these matches hold up so well is because at times they do feel like fights because Vader would beat the shit out of guys. So it was, and they'd have to fight back to you know, earn his respect, a little bit like Brock Lesnar at times. So to me, I think all three of these matches are worth watching. I think if you go back and watch these, you'll gain an appreciation for the, I mean, these are three totally different opponents and yet three really good matches. So I think Vader also had the misfortune of being on top at a time when WCW was lacking in direction. And, you know, maybe if Vader had managed to, you know, come around a year earlier or come around maybe or stick around maybe a couple years later when they started getting more of a direction, maybe he could have found his way. But and then in other ways, I think he was the perfect fit for this time in WCW when they still had that sort of Wild West mentality before they became more polished under the Eric Bischoff regime. So, you know, just a great performer, certainly.
Yeah, I would definitely back that up and probably just add that maybe the wrestling community was slow to come around on Vader in the way that he really deserved. Maybe due to a recency bias more than anything, because you just, it sticks out in your mind, sort of that lackluster WWF slash E, well, really just F run that he had. And the couple of comebacks he did that weren't great. Of course, he continued to work overseas and, you know, add to his cachet of really great, brutal matches. And eventually, you know, people started to, I think, look back on his work a little bit more fondly with more of a historical lens and appreciate, oh, wow, this was really a guy who was one of the best of the super heavyweights, put in fantastic work during a time period that is quite maligned, as you said, Greg, and unfortunately is no longer with us. So that probably brought more reflections on his career and a greater appreciation for his overall body of work. You know, I've been kind of a Vader mark for a while. And after, I think after he died, there was a playlist that they put together on WWE Network, which was pretty impressive and probably opened some new eyes. So I hope that for folks who haven't seen a ton of his matches, maybe you haven't watched a lot of WCW, it was just before your time, or you know, you never thought a whole lot of Vader because he wasn't a big WWF guy. Check out these big matches here, the ones that we talked about and others. And you might come away very impressed. He is, again, one of the all-time great big men in the sport.
Also, check out on YouTube, White Castle of Fear.
Yes.
watch that little mini movie with Sting and then appreciate how it's the greatest thing that's ever been made. And then watch these Vader matches. Whose turn is it? Greg's?
I feel like maybe. I don't know.
What was Tim, our last episode?
Tim, you picked Giant, right?
No, I think I picked the Giant.
Oh, did and you then, pick Giant?
Yeah, Greg picked Giant. Was okay, that was so our last episode, so I guess right. It's me.
It is you.
Oh, boy.
Not to put you on the spot.
No. I had three choices in mind. I'm gonna do the one that will surprise you, but I think in a good way. It is Kevin Sullivan Part 2. No.
No, God, you got
no, me. I'm not going to do that. But I am going to do His Lordship, Sir William Regal.
Yes! Yes!
Unconventional, but I really feel strongly about that one. So, not someone who's come up a lot on this show to date. Mm. Now, he is going to get a dedicated episode.
I love that pick. I am a Regal mark, 100%.
Good. Thought that would make you happy.
And I like the pick as well. I think it's unconventional, as you pointed out, and it's going to lead to some interesting, potentially some interesting gems to unearth.
That's right.
Can't wait. In the meantime, Greg, have you returned to any other worlds of podcasting?
I have not. Well, I guest starred briefly with my hard traveling companion on Ben Morse's podcast recently, and that was really fun. Check that out on Twitter. I will retweet it again at some point. And a very brief segment, but we got to talk a little Green Lantern. That was nice. But other than that, no, I haven't really done anything. I've been too busy and trying to navigate this crazy thing called life. So, not ruling out a return to podcasting at some point, but for now, I'll just stick to talking WCW.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Happy to keep you then. Mm-hmm. Very good.
What about you, Tim?
I, in addition to this program, do a show with you, Jenny, and our friend Jacob Williams called PTB NXT. So that's also on Place to Be Nation Wrestling, going chronologically through NXT on the WWE Network, but starting from the year 2014. And our most recent episode of that was covering the first TakeOver event. And we're going to be recording an episode very soon detailing the fallout from that TakeOver, looking at a few episodes of television and the spillover coming out of the first TakeOver of NXT. In addition to that, You, Jenny, have your own feed. That's called the Jenny Position, is it not?
It is.
And we do a show there called Talkin' Pop. And we had a Halloween sort of special, a little bit low-key this year. We ended up just watching a movie. And I shouldn't say just watching a movie. We did a live watch and commentary for Creepshow 2. Great anthology feature from the 80s. That's an old favorite of yours. I don't think I'd ever seen it. So kind of a new experience for me. It was just fun to do for Halloween, for the spirit, on Talkin' Pop. Also on the Jenny Position, we have The Journey Through Infinity, you and I with JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo, talking all of the films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in chronological order. And we are up to, we talked Avengers Age of Ultron not too long ago. So we're going to be doing Ant-Man yes. next. Yeah, on The Journey Through Infinity. Those shows on The Jenny Position. Finally, on the North-South Connection podcast feed, another comics-themed show that is called Shrinkwrapped, The Psychology of Superheroes. And sometimes supervillains. You and I, with our friend Sean Kidd, most recent installment, we covered Professor Xavier, specifically in the story and New Mutants known as Legion. Legion's first appearance, Professor X's illegitimate son. What are the implications of this? How does it impact the psychology of Charles Xavier? We also did a little wrap-up. We added a feature to Shrinkwrapped, where we sort of step out of character, break the fourth wall, and tell listeners what we sort of thought of the episode, of the events in question. So added that, you know, something we'd just been wanting to do because we're very opinionated.
Yes, we are.
But otherwise, that show is rather artistic and weird. But if you're into that, do check it out. Beyond that, you can find me on Twitter. I am at Psyche68, CYKE68, where I have an avatar of Vader wearing his singlet backwards. It looks like his head is backwards.
We didn't even talk about that.
Well, that's what it is. I've had it for years, so it's not just in honor of this episode.
You hit a lot of my shows. Thank you for that, Tim. And I will add a new episode of You Heard About Pluto coming up, in which me and Steve Bennett watched the pilot episode of Three's Company. So all of that is very weird, but it was very fun. And on the North-South Connection, I have some more wrestling pods over there. The Extreme Three-Way Dance is my journey through ECW. We're in late 95 now, me and JT and John D'Amato. So that's awesome show. And also TNA Never Dies. Me and JT and Aaron George are watching TNA from 2002. So we're late in that year as well. Very weird shows that I have. Also, you can find me at Twitter. At the Jenny Position. So I think that is everything. Thank you so much for listening. Good night.